Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bald Move TV podcast. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And tonight, we are going to be talking about American Gods, episode 202 and 203, The Beguiling Man and Munin. I think is how you pronounce it.
Munin, I think is how Munin? I said it.
One half of the Munin and Huggin combo. The Odin's twin ravens.
I think I've seen that on Nick Jr.
Yeah?
Yeah, the kids programming block.
Heckle and Jekylls, who is what I thought their names were. But last time we had talked about American Gods, we had seen the first episode. A lot of critics had seen the first three, and a lot of people were shitting on the television show. And we had seen the first episode, like, we think it's pretty good. Maybe the next two episodes will be truly awful, and we'll see. We've seen two more episodes. We've seen the first three. How is your opinion of how American Gods are going so far? Lots of hows.
Hows? Yeah.
I'm full of hows.
I'm loving the show. I think it's a lot of fun. Not as much fun as the first season, but as much fun as some of the great seasons of Banshee that we've seen.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot of metaphorical and literal wheel spinning going on throughout these episodes.
Right.
A lot of dialogue exchanges that maybe didn't need to be in there. Maybe they're padding out the rest of the season. But if that's what it looks like, then I don't hate it because they're still all fun scenes with all of these really fun characters.
Yeah.
And I like it.
I mean, here's the thing.
I think it's not been given a fair shake.
Because I think it's still like nothing else that's on television, and it still looks great. And I think the highs are about as high, and the mediums are about as, you know, because not every scene can be amazing. But what I think is different this season is that there are some actual scenes that just clunk. You know, like all of the stuff with Wednesday and Nancy.
Scenes, yeah.
That should be a really fun traveling road show. Everyone should be packing the stadiums to see that traveling road show pull into town. And I'm sorry, I don't care how many maps you're going to fuck. None of that stuff worked.
We were playing this game while we were watching these episodes of which one of these scenes do you think the characters or the actors all had to ad-lib here?
Yes.
Which of these scenes were made up? And I think it was most of the car scenes,
definitely, a lot of these traveling.
That's what I got.
And they're splitting the characters up. It seems, feels like unnecessarily, although it does. I feel like that they have all pretty clearly defined missions. I guess there is a little bit of like, am I being jerked around? Is there actually a point to where all this is going? I haven't read any of the source material, and a lot of stuff doesn't seem like it makes literal sense. But I'm trusting that it's going to actually, when I see everything worked out, be like, oh, wow, this was really brilliant. Mr. Wednesday, what a man. Or, you know, Low Key, what a guy. Or Mr. World, he's a worthy opponent. But I don't know. That's kind of an article of faith.
I think I said this the last time. I don't see any heroes here.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to say some more like preamble, or should we get right into the episode?
Let's just right into these episodes.
So here's some points on that. I kind of broke this down.
Let's drive right in like a train driving into a car on a railroad track.
A metaphorical car. It might be a divine horse. It might be a Valkyrie. We'll talk about that. Okay, the first episode, 202, The Beguiling Man. These are some points of like no particular order or importance, just some things I want to talk about. Shadow being tortured.
Are you reading the literal script right now?
yeah. Yeah, this is the notes to the director. Shadow's being techno-tortured by Mr. Town, and this is all an exercise to give us a backstory on Shadow.
Right.
Which, in principle, we should be hungry for, because Shadow is just such a fucking blank slate.
Right.
The thing is, this feels like a Mad Lib, because what they filled in on that blank plate was not what I
was
expecting.
It was nonsense.
He's like this bookish, intellectual, pacifist, wayward, tortured messiah kind of guy.
Right.
And they hammer that point home by when he's experiencing all these various forms of oppression and prejudice and bigotry from all sides and all communities and cultures, and as he's suffering these abuses, they intercut these flashes of this chromed out Jesus. I mean, the theme of this like hormesis, that like you take enough of a lethal poison and it makes you stronger, it gives you an immunity to it. They're trying to sell us that like his whole life has been this, but not sure if I'm buying. Also, who's his mom and who's his dad?
Okay, I have some theories on that.
All right.
So the thing I noticed, and I think a lot of people are saying, is that last season there was probably a lot more of these hidden things that I missed, mm-hmm. because I didn't catch it through mm-hmm. the first watch or right. whatever, it was lost on me. Those in scene types of things, like books they're reading, show music that's playing. This season, the one of these differences you can see between showrunners, I assume, is that things are quite literal and they're very direct.
Yeah.
So they drop some in flashback clues here, like he's reading one book called Siddhartha.
Right.
Which is...
all about Buddha.
Not really.
Really?
It's about a man named Siddhartha who at one point in his travels meets Buddha.
Mm.
But it's unrelated. But the name Siddhartha means he who has found his meaning, or he who has attained his goals.
Uh-huh.
So is that supposed to mean that's what shadow is?
I mean, it's all...
or can be?
Yeah.
And then at one point he's reading A Movable Feast, which uh-huh. is an Ernest Hemingway book
uh-huh.
that he wrote a biography an autobiography in his 20s, and uh-huh. didn't publish it until after he died. Fully 40 years later in right. 1960s.
Right.
But it was, I thought that was interesting because it's kind of like, you know, visiting a flashback. It's the book is a flashback in itself.
Yeah.
While you're in a flashback of shadow.
Yeah.
So it's so very directly, they have their finger on their nose. Like, no,
it's, and also it's just like, you know, no teenage boy reads these books.
No.
None.
No.
None. I don't care how many French diplomats your mom is. It just fell false. This guy did not feel like they did a bad job of telling me that this is young Shadow.
I disagree. I feel like if you had given this actor another 20 years, he could play the perfect adult Shadow. But, like, this is the perfect young Shadow for the wrong adult Shadow that we have, that we're working with.
No, I'm talking about, I'm not talking about physicality. I'm talking about, like, just what the character they're building towards seems like. And
exactly.
I get it. He's beat
saying,
down, and he's angry at his mom died, and he renounces his faith in God, and he's... But, like, okay.
No, my point is that if we had a better adult current day Shadow uh-huh. who could like carry that in his performance and his eyes and the way he speaks, I don't know if that could do something.
Oh, you're saying that you're going back to throwing shade on the adult Shadow.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
his
all
name
right.
is Shadow after all.
That's
I
true.
Can't
He's
I
all
can't
about
help
it.
But do it.
He's all about it.
But I will say we're being way too hard on Ricky Whittle. I think he's doing much better this season so far.
Does he shave his armpits?
I don't think so.
This man has no hair. Visible hair anywhere below.
Well, he just lifts weight so much that it just rubs the hair right off.
Just those hair follicles are constantly squeezing the hair out like so many tubes of toothpaste.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll buy that. All right. Who is his mom? Who is his father? What's the deal with this gold / silver coin? I got no idea. Like, I think that it's somehow connected to this ancient American buffalo god, because he keeps meeting that amongst his climbs on Skull Mountain. But otherwise, I don't. I have no clue. But it seems like his mom knows he's got some kind of spark in the divine, or maybe she provided it. Because there's all this talk about your light baby, and we know Laura can see it from a million miles away. What are your thoughts on these identities?
And he can make snow. So what do all those things mean?
Storm from the X-Men. The gender-bent Storm.
I mean, I would love to go in and sort of like research all of this mythology, but I'm enjoying the surprise of it. Maybe he's just an invented character, but I feel like if I try to dive into that, I might spoil myself on this,
interesting surprise. That's the other thing. I do a lot of research around the mythology of the show, like the different gods and stuff, but... boy, getting on any of the like fan wikis or the Reddits, right, like they don't segregate the spoilers and the books and the TV, right, stuff very well at all.
Yeah. And I will say, if you're into mythology, like I very much am, I want to recommend another podcast that's not paying me to do this. It's called Mythology on the Parcast Network, and it's mostly the Greek mythology that they're handling, mm-hmm, but it's been fascinating and interesting to listen to.
How dare you give free exposure to
this is Norse mythology mostly. I don't know. All the cultures are wrapped up, and I haven't seen much Greek, actually. But as far as who his mother is, I don't know. She has some kind of light... some kind of Jessica Lange coven disease where her light fades and goes into shadow as she dies of cancer, maybe, and then she fully imbues it into him.
Uh-huh.
Odin is, or Wednesday, is somehow involved. I think that was definitely him that visited him in the waiting room.
The voice sounds nothing like it. I don't think the fingers look the same. I get it that Odin can probably inhabit whatever body he wants to, but...
No, I'm just saying, if you listen closely to the delivery of the line, it sounds like Ian McShane, and then they, at the end of every sentence, they merged it with some other actor's voice so they could trick you that way.
Your theory is they blend the Ian McShane's voice into
some other
character's voice to kind of mask it. I don't know. I don't buy it.
I think so. I absolutely heard it.
Okay.
And... he's got a vest. He's the only one who has some sort of interest in shadow.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know why it wouldn't be him. What is your idea?
So if he's Odin's son, if he's Thor, essentially.
I'm not saying he's his son. I'm just saying Odin, I think Wednesday was definitely the one to visit him.
That implies his father. Okay.
No, I have no idea who the father is. I think the father is whatever god that Shadow has a part of that Wednesday wants from him.
Okay. All right. It seems like he'd be allied to the old god, which is consistent with the buffalo thing. I mean, like I said, I'm sure there's people that have read the books who are like, this is all very obvious, but not to me.
But we're not here for the books. We're here for the show.
So there's also another theme is the old gods gearing up for war. There's this talk about now that the old stars died, there's going to be a newborn star. So that portends a new character.
New Zoria.
That's going to have a very important role in the wars to come. Chernabog is talking about swinging his hammer. It's all very badass.
He can deliver a monologue like none other.
Right. I love... Mama G. Going off to lop heads if she can get her shift traded around. That's
love it.
I mean... that's where the reality of the show like, bumps up. It's like, would Ragnarok be canceled because the Hindu god of war can't get her slot free?
Or are they just being like,
Karen's being a real bitch about trading Saturdays?
Being like very, very timelessly dry about the fact that she's pretending to be a waitress.
Maybe that's the thing. You know? She's like, it's a joke.
Right.
It's like a god joke that I don't get because it's, you know, their humor, like their... purviews and moralities are far above my human sense of humor.
I get it.
Traveling roadshow that is fun to watch.
Yeah.
Ifrit and Salim.
Yes.
Really
the sidecar
dig it.
Show.
Yeah, the sidecar. Traveling sidecar show.
Traveling sidecar.
So Ifrit's been assigned, the djinn has been assigned to go get Gungnir, which is Odin's spear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be very cool next episode. And Salim wants to go with him, and the djinn's like, this is stupid. I'm a god or a genie, and you're immortal. And Salim says, well, you need my belief in you to keep you going. And there's going to be lots of cute shots of them and their little motorcycle gear.
They are adorable.
I need some chibi artwork of them, fan artwork of them posted to the Reddit stat.
Have you looked for it? I'm sure it already
might
exists.
Because it's like, god damn, you just take that and patch and sew it on your backpack and you're good to go. So Odin and Mr. Nancy split from Laura and Sweeney to prepare for war. Again, I really wanted to like this, but all that stuff felt like filler. The dialogue wasn't stellar. There's this really awesome moment where Odin prepares to sacrifice Betty, his Cadillac ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got some theories on what that might be, but man, the letdown immediately the next episode where this car just reincarnates and everything's fine.
Right.
No bubbles, no troubles. I haven't seen a bullshit fake out climax like that since the pilot of Peaky Blinders, and I'm
okay
still kind of pissed
it.
About it.
I'm really okay with it. The way it was delivered, the cool fire and the horses neighing, like, what the hell was that? What kind of Valhalla was it? What sacrifice was there?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. Betty should have died, but...
But it's just so weird on a show that's always...
Did Betty die and Betty become reincarnated with his horse?
What does that even
yes.
mean?
I don't know.
Because, like, my theory...
But it's got super horsepower now. I'll tell you that much.
My theory on Betty is that she's either a Valkyrie or she is Odin's horse...
That.
Sleipnir?
That's what I just said.
Okay.
And you said, what does that even mean?
No, but we hadn't talked about the horse yet. You got the horse before the cart.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. Well, all wait, right. The cart before the horse. If your horse was before the cart, he'd be in the proper
this
position.
This is easily
you've
disproven
done hitched,
by going back and listening
you've
for done
2 seconds.
You've
done hitched the horse to the back of the trailer and the back of the wagon. Anyway, this...
Okay.
This, the thing about Odin's horse, Sleipnir...
Okay.
Is that it's an eight-legged horse.
What?
And his 65 Cadillac is a V8 engine, has
shut
eight pistons pumping.
Your mouth.
Punching out the horsepower just like Sleipnir. So, but I don't know. What would that mean? So on a show on a show where life and death is kind of tenuous, and but yet also like lasting and expensive because it's a big deal for a god to kill another god, and a god can't just undo another god's death and all this other stuff. Mm. It seems crazy easy to sacrifice, quote unquote, Betty, and then she just comes back 5 minutes later. It undercuts all this other thematic stuff about the sacrifice and death.
I think the sacrifice was the car, and the body was a husk that was refilled by Sleipnir.
Oh, so you're saying Betty died.
Oh. Sleipnir lives.
Okay. Well, that would make it pretty cool, but I don't know that there's any evidence of that.
You just named all of the evidence in the world.
No, I did not. Okay. Anything?
Canon confirmed.
The other thing that happens in this episode is Mr. World threatens Bilquist because she's trying to really stay on the fence here between this battle of the old gods and the new, mm-hmm. and doesn't seem like she's going to be able to stay on one side or stay off either side for very much longer. Who do you think she actually falls for?
Old gods.
Yeah, I mean, right? You dance with the one that brung you.
Yeah.
She's ancient. These Johnny-come-lately guys.
Sex is the oldest profession in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be the last profession in the world.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it.
If you have anything to say about it anyway.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to episode 203.
No.
What? You got other things? Okay.
I have other things.
Let me hit the emergency brake like Laura down a dirt road. didn't see that coming. What you got?
So, Mr. Town.
Yes.
Is he dead?
I think so.
Okay. But that's a big name actor to just kill that in that way.
Is he?
And we didn't
or
see.
Is he just
we didn't
a misfortune
see any like
guy
official
on,
head squish.
Is he really big actor? Is he
and
just
he's
a
got
misfortunate
a name,
guy?
Mr. Town.
Yeah.
Mr. World. Mr. Nancy. Everyone's got a name. Everyone who gets a name.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But people die. I mean, we've seen big name gods die. So.
I just wanted your thoughts on that because it seemed like I think he's coming back.
Gotcha.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I hate Laura Moon a lot, but I wanted to talk about when they're having their car road show. She says something along the lines of, you take, and give nothing back. And then it reminded me of that one whole episode last season where it was dedicated to her Irish version of herself that was leaving the offerings. Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
Does he remember that?
Surely, but I don't
Does
think that's literally
her. Does she look
like
her. That same girl?
Yeah, she
well,
did.
Well, then why would they have her?
I don't know. Maybe it is implying that there's like some long-lost ancestry there.
I'm wondering if he remembers and if that's something that's sort of like driving his character.
Now that you're mentioning it, I skipped that entire plot, the whole Sweeney and Laura traveling roadshow, which was the best roadshow.
A lot happened.
Yeah. Okay. Apologies. Thanks for keeping me on the road. Thanks for pulling the emergency brake there, Laura.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I don't know. And like, okay, here's the other thing. they travel through the Horde, which, what the fuck? How is that a thing? How does that happen? How is, I'm assuming that's kind of like his pot of gold.
Okay, wait. Can we talk about how he describes entering the Horde first?
Yes.
Because this, I'm sure this got a lot of bitches moist.
Uh-huh.
He says, it's a way backstage. It's a lot smaller. It's a place I like to hide things, and it might be a tight squeeze.
Okay.
And then what happens is they have sex in the Horde.
Okay. So if this is easy to miss, but we saw people talking about it on Reddit, and we started freeze framing ourselves. Like, there are these like single frame still images of Laura and Sweeney in some sort of sexual position that is flashing as they're like rotating around each other and going through Horde space and screaming and yelling. There's definitely some kind of attraction there. And
yes, you can definitely see it.
Yeah. And I thought I saw that. And when he visited her 18th century self too. So yeah. Maybe they are going some kind of immortal beloved thing.
Yeah. That's what made me think of it.
Some kind of a Dracula, retelling.
Right.
Which that's fine.
Yeah.
One of the things I like, why I say it's one of the more entertaining road shows, is because they seem like they're kind of like on each other's par. Like, he doesn't take any of her shit and she's got a lot of shit to take.
Yeah.
A lot. And then she beats him up every once in a while, and it feels kind of like, you know, she gets her licks in, he gets his licks in.
Feels like kind of an equal power balance.
Yeah. He also mentions that he's of the opinion that Odin's lying to her. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. He mentions that there is a devil in the French Quarter of New Orleans who has this thing called the Spice of Life that could put some more life into her bones, calls him a baron. And there's only one character I can think of because my only other frame of reference is American Horror Story, but it's Papa Legba.
Yeah,
the voodoo kind of
figure. I can save her a trip and tell her right now that when she gets down there, uh-huh, he's gonna say she ain't got no soul to trade.
Oh, right. Yeah. Someone else holds it. Yeah. I wonder.
I'm desperate to see what this New Orleans Baron has. Yeah, to, has
Devil
to
Baron.
Say.
It's gonna be pretty cool. But yeah, no. The other thing is, like, I just the Horde thing. I wonder how many more times they can keep popping things up and adding new things before you start to get tired of it. Because I'm thinking in like season two of Game of Thrones, which I think has one of the smoother power arcs, you were still like, okay, you had dragons, but now, oh shit, there's shadow babies popping out of people's vagoos, and there's blood magic happening and all that. And you eventually reach a point where, you know, Jon Snow can't pull out a magic crystal ball and instantly win things in season 8, or it's going to seem stupid. And I wonder, like, does it break the game a bit to have this guy be able to teleport wherever he wants and, you know, bring one human companion? I hope they've thought all that stuff through, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine because it seems like it takes an enormous physical toll and mental toll to travel through
that they instantly recover from. It's not that big a deal, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe if they go and they take it right back, then they come out with bloody noses. Mm. And then the third time through, their brains explode.
It's like a Stranger Things situation.
Yeah, I don't know. But when they do come out, we are reminded that he's wearing these handcuffs.
Yeah.
Which completely forgot about. In fact, I was like, did he get handcuffed in the Horde? What is happening? How does his magic work?
No, I remembered he got handcuffed at one point in season one, but I didn't remember the exact circumstances.
Okay, I remembered, and I'm going to remind all of you.
Right? Yeah.
So he went to the hotel where, what's her name? Laura Moon was waiting for a shadow in that hotel room.
Yep.
And he tried to take the coin from her. They got in a fight, and he tried to drown her in the bathtub. And then a police officer bust in, found him, and being dead as she is, pretended to really be dead, stopped moving, and then he was arrested.
Yeah.
So as the police car was taking him to the police station where Wednesday and Shadow already were for the bank robbery, that's when the station was attacked and he escaped that way.
Right. Okay.
But now he's free of those handcuffs, so I'm glad the buildup led to that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it felt like a big deal.
Right.
but I don't understand. Because, like, you know, like the Dresden Files books, there's the idea that, like, fairies are hurt by, like, iron contact on their skin. So, like, wearing handcuffs would be agony for them. But, like, I don't think this universe is playing by those rules. I don't think that Sweeney would be necessarily classified as a fairy. And, two, like, it doesn't seem like...
He's just not physically strong enough to rip them off himself, but never just had the time yet to find the tools.
Yeah.
But no, he's picked multiple locks on cars and hotwired them to get them. You know what? That's crazy. Why was he still wearing those handcuffs?
I think he's like, dead wife, give me my cuffs back there. I think they look cool. They made me look cool. Like, I just busted out of a cop car. Like, I'm surprised he didn't pull that. Because I can see that guy, like, these are my bracelets. My bad boy bracelets.
That's a great Irish accent.
Oh, thank you.
These are me bracelets.
Hey, are we ready to move on to the next episode?
Hey, I think we are.
Episode 203, Moonin or Munin or Munin?
Nope.
So yeah, we are introduced to the character of Sam Blackcrow, who is a some sort of First Nations Native American character who identified as being two-spirited.
So I read an interview with on Collider with Devery Jacobs, and she...
That's the person that plays Sam Blackcrow?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. And here's what she said. She said that the character Sam is from the Cherokee Nation, and not all of the tribes recognize two-spirited people.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she identifies as queer and not two-spirited because she's Mohawk.
Hmm.
And they don't have that. And because Sam is Cherokee, they have, or they represent as two-spirited.
Hmm. Do you think that this is going to be a character ongoing? Like, it seems like it's a pretty big, like, she's going to come back around. And I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what all this means as it applies to her character.
I do. I think she is, because she was a really interesting character.
Oh, yeah.
And to have that much depth to a one-off person, I don't think happens without them coming back later.
Yeah.
Especially since we were introduced to another interesting and different god from the Lakota Nation.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Iktomi, right?
Iktomi. Yeah, there it is. It's in my notes. Iktomi.
Uh-huh.
So we have all this Native American culture going on in this episode, and I think it's introducing more and more as this war builds, and I think they're definitely coming back in some way. Or maybe she was just there to prove that Iktomi lives, because
there's at least some people that are believing in those traditions.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that she also has this, like, buffalo skull imagery on her. And as we previously discussed, like, there is some connection, this buffalo spirit with Shadow. And I wonder, because I didn't do a lot of reading this Twin Spirit stuff, because I heard that you were, like, read this interview and whatnot. But what I understand is it's aside from, like, its kind of third, fourth gender aspect, it also is kind of got some spiritual or ceremonial significance. And I wonder if it'll turn out that she's, like, not a god, but maybe, like, a shaman type, or has that kind of connection. Because, yeah, it's because, like, you know, the show itself is begging the question when they have Shadow be like, you're just a human, right? You know, you're not like a freaky deaky god, or you're not going to call lightning down or something like that. I tell you what,
right? Yeah, it's considered to be like a huge honor. In fact, one of the people she name dropped in the car on their car ride finds them and kills them.
Yeah,
was a two-spirited person. Which is what made her think of it, or why she told the story, I guess.
It drives me crazy how much she takes her eyes off the road. Like, I have a real phobia when I'm watching television and I see a character, like, take their eyes off the road for 5-6 seconds while they're fucking with a Polaroid or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, I felt like I was behind someone watching them shaving in the mirror or applying makeup or watching a YouTube video. Like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Should I call the police?
She drives as the Sam Blackcrow flies.
Yeah. So we can close out the whole Shadow chapter of this episode.
Just close it on up.
Because he gets his vision after he gets off of the train.
Yeah.
And he gets himself out of there, and this crow, the Moonin figure, the spokesperson of Odin, tells him to go to Cairo and meet the Egyptians. So he hitchhikes to Cairo after he meets this Sam Blackrow character, shows up there, Odin meets him.
With an awesome Firefly greeting.
He gives him this, tosses him a bottle of liquor and says, if you don't wake up tomorrow morning feeling like $1 million and energized for your quest, then you can go home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What's that bottle? Some kind of crazy Viking berserker juice.
I don't think so. It looks like just a regular bottle of wine.
Man, there's no way a god says you're going to wake up feeling like $1 million, tosses you a potion, you drink it, and it's just a bottle of wine.
When has he ever needed potions?
I'm just saying.
I don't think so.
You know,
if
like
anything, it's probably some sort of like healing potion.
Yeah. Well, it's like his spear. Didn't it look like it was in a guitar case or something like that?
To keep it hidden. That's different.
I know, but I'm just saying there's a lot of mundane things that take on surprising significance in this show because it's all metaphor, you know.
I think what it was them both drinking was sealing the pact that he was going to stay. You know, like spitting in your hand and shaking.
I'm always looking for something to be something because, like,
I know you are.
My thought last episode was that I thought Wednesday ordered the hit on the old star and killed her to as a false flag operation. It doesn't seem like that's going anywhere. So no. I probably was wrong on that.
No, Mr. World definitely did the hit on Zoria.
And simultaneously snatched Shadow.
Both.
Okay.
And he was aliens.
Yeah.
Which they didn't even explain the alien shit, but him in a train, so it's fine.
I want to talk some Mr. World stuff for a minute. What do we think of new media? I mean, the show, she makes a big, aggressive, in-your-face splash. The show itself kind of asks you to contemplate that when a character says in-universe, what is this an actual upgrade?
What the fuck is that an upgrade?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to take, it's going to be a while to get used to the character because I thought what Gillian Anderson did last year with all the different takes on the classic media figures was very iconic and awesome. And what this is doing is new media is intentionally shittier and vulgar and surfacer and gloss. And so if they're pulling that off, I'm going to necessarily hate that character in comparison.
Right.
But
exactly.
That's a really good character if that's what's happening.
Right. I think you're supposed to not like her.
She's
and
just
I like her for that reason.
When Technology Boy said put on whatever face makes you feel like you're the mostest, that's exactly what she did. She's doing the most all the fucking time. She engages in like hentai tentacle fucking by the end of this episode.
It's incredible the kind of power she's wielding doing it though.
Yeah,
because
no.
Essentially that
I'm just
means
saying it's really
she turned into Zuckerberg by the end of the episode.
You know, and I love the idea of like this all-seeing kind of spy state and social media wanting to get all mixed up into that because it's not just about likes and follows and subscribes. It's also about what are you doing? What are you buying? Who are you dating? Who are you messaging? What are your friends' network? Let's get all this information about you, your credit score. It is very, you know, kind of Orwellian and oppressive.
Right.
You know, it's kind of scarier than state sponsored surveillance, honestly, because there's no way to hold him accountable. So I like I said, I like the character, but because the character is designed to be hateable,
to be hated,
I also
exactly.
hate the character.
Right.
And she's a lot.
She is a lot. You know what? I thought that about Technology Boy.
Technology Boy was a real shit.
He looks kind of tame in comparison now.
Real shitty asshole that I didn't like in season one, and now he's kind of grown on me.
Right.
What do we think? Speaking of New Media Boy, Technology Boy.
Yes.
Is he in trouble? Because I get the idea that, like, Mr. World's always just this close to snatching him.
What use has he proved lately? In fact, by the end of the episode, he's actively betrayed World.
I don't think betrayed. It's more
he
of like
he allowed Laura to kill Argus.
But I think Argus, they correctly identified he was trying to play everyone against each other and sell himself for the highest bidder.
World.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's exactly. I think Technology Boy made a defensible call here. I don't know that Mr. World is going to see it that way.
No, exactly.
Especially
so to
since,
answer your question, yes, I think he's in trouble.
Yeah, especially since I think he was weak when he was trying to get media out of its shell and something that like Mr. World felt like he had to do himself. Like, there's But I don't know. Like,
which he kind of did, too. Yeah. His media appeared to them.
Right. And he did some kind of weird hand gesture and pulled her right out of the panel is how I took that. I could be wrong, but that's the story I think they were telling. I don't know. I don't think they're going to... He's going to be killed. I just... Seems like they're... The new gods aren't as tight as we might have thought from season one. Seems like they're not as tightly bound together and as unified as front as you might have thought or hoped.
Right,
if you're Mr.
exactly.
World.
And if they could all get their shit together, then it would be so easy to destroy the old gods, right?
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the Argus stuff, which is also the Laura stuff, which is also the Odin stuff, or Mr. Wednesday stuff. I guess it doesn't matter. He's referred to by all of his names now. Here's the prime example of what you were talking about, how the show versus tell. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like last season, if they told Argus a story, the guy wouldn't have come up, and then he became the American surveillance system. It would just be like the eyes would slowly turn into cameras, and that would be the implication. Right. But saying it somehow makes it feel cheap and vulgar.
Oh, right, and it feels like I'm being spoken down to.
Yeah,
like,
it robs your ability to, like, figure out. I mean, it's a very easy...
Like, this
it's
Neil,
not a hard puzzle to solve, but come on.
Think of the audience. This is Neil Gaiman's audience that you're talking down to? That ain't right.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get a wider audience, though, because God knows AMC did not go broke playing to the lowest common Walking Dead denominator.
So you're going to drop the previous showrunners and also try to go... gear yourselves towards a wider audience? That's crazy.
Like I said, Neil Gaiman's on board. I don't think he would be...
Okay, but I just... That's
the flagship example of this episode of how it feels a little cruder and not as tight.
I just, every couple of episodes, I want to remind you of what this show would be like, or the season would be like, if Kristen Chenoweth and Gillian Anderson were on.
I know.
And let's move on.
So there's this interesting Argus backstory. I don't fully understand what the hell is going on here, because Odin is tracking Argus through his own memories through some kind of chrome elevator device, and which shows you got to do a lot of reading on Wikipedia to make sense of what's going on. But,
basically, these are all of Argus's lives and things he's seen.
Yeah, and like it goes back to his original Greek origin, where he was guarding this heifer Io to keep Zeus from fucking her, because Hera was jealous.
And Zeus loves fucking cows.
Zeus loves transforming into animals and fucking women, or fucking women animals. He's just like...
He's just all about
it. It's all just a big, big, big ball of
sucks and fucks.
Of swans and bulls and men and women. And it's just crazy. Imagine that scene with Bilquis last year, and just throw every third person as either a swan or a bull,
and they're all Zeus,
and they're all Zeus, and they're probably Zeus's daughters, but
and sisters.
So Hermes, Zeus paid Hermes to kill Argus so he could get some of that sweet, sweet cow pussy.
Hell yeah.
And when Hermes killed Argus, it was the first act of divine bloodshed since the Olympian gods overthrew the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that that's a big portentous thing in the Greek pantheon. I wonder if this is going to be a herald. Doesn't seem like, because already gods have been killed. So, but I don't know if this is meant to remind us of this kind of insightful act. Mm. I did particularly like the shocked cow performance, like when he stabbed it. That cow looked like mortified, and then you saw the human face and had the same look on its face.
Right.
Pretty
her
good.
Face.
Her pretty good bovine acting.
Yes.
The Library of Alexandria. There's also an interesting thing where Mr. Wednesday's making Laura do all of his dirty work. That's got to be some kind of divine legal contract.
And the whole time he's doing this, I don't know why. I think he just didn't want to put his life on the line. But the whole time he's doing this, he's sort of egging Laura into admitting that she wants to live for herself, and she doesn't really care about Shadow.
I think that's right.
I think it's absolutely right.
I think that ever since that Jackal guy said, whenever you're done here on Earth, I'm going to be waiting for you to take you to the darkness... She doesn't want to die.
No.
She knows hell is real, and she doesn't want to die. And I think he's right on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think she understands it at the end.
Yeah.
And she's got her heartbeat back, so...
So she was like a week away from rotting into the ground. Now they said it staved the rot off. I mean, it looks like she is almost like freshly dead condition. She has been cured of her autopsy scars, and presumably she's no more. She's not stitched together anymore.
Yeah,
and
the shoulder's gone. Hopefully the maggots are out of there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how? Whatever.
No more snack opportunities.
No
for
more
ibis.
Vomiting.
Formaldehyde or whatever. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. But she's going to continue to rot again.
Yes.
I guess.
Well, or I wonder, because I also wonder, like, how strong she is now, whether, because Mr. Wednesday will lie about anything. So I wonder if maybe she's actually not going to rot, and he just is not telling her that.
There's no way.
Yeah. You know, because I'm just. I'm kind of tired of the dead wife shit.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping when she said, I'm just another dead girl in the field, maybe I should give up. And I'm like,
yes, lie down
out.
And rot.
Give him the coin. Let's move on.
But it feels like Spawn, you know, like, oh, he's only got this finite amount of life force. And oh, every time he uses his powers, it ticks away. And every fucking time it gets close to ticking away, he magically gets more, or he gets infused with Holy Spirit or some shit and it doesn't matter. So like, either this is a real ticking clock on her, or it's just an annoying kind of, I don't know.
I think it's a real ticking clock, and I think what happens now is she goes to find Mad Sweeney to find the Baron to make it a real life thing.
Okay.
A for real thing.
Yeah.
And then they have a love story, and then I start vomiting formaldehyde. I love Pablo Schreiber.
He's way too cool for her. Him kicking ass on that train last episode was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
This is the mustache on Orange is the New Black.
This is Dominic from Weeds.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's Nico from The Wire or whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, it's really amazing. He's kind of a Tom Hardy type. How he can play... You don't think so?
How he can play what?
How he can play
on that. I was thinking like physically.
Oh no! Like you don't think? Because I think like Tom Hardy can be like a suave, like gay James Bond in Inception, and he can be this roided out Hulk beast Bane in Batman. Like he can play.
Oh yeah, all types.
Yeah, he's got this ways that he's got this physicality where he's actually beast, but he can. Play smaller somehow?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because, like, I don't know how these guys, like, puff themselves up like bullfrogs or stuff like that, but Pablo Schreiber looks like he's as big as a fucking house in this show.
Oh, my God, especially he's playing alongside Emily Browning, so that one where he takes her into the horde and he clutches her to his chest, it's
she's just, like,
she's
this little bitty thing.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of forced perspective. It's like Elijah Woods and Ian McKellen, Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Just have her stand even, just take a couple of steps back and you take a, it's whatever they do. It's just, he really, really believably looks like a fucking juggernaut.
The biggest, unluckiest fucking
leprechaun
I've ever seen.
Speaking of Sweeney.
He's off to see the Baron.
He's off to see
the Baron.
The wonderful Baron
of Nola.
He tries to... I'm editing that out. he tries to...
I earned that.
He tries to steal a car, and it's so funny because he thinks his luck is finally turning, and because he gets the perfect car.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to break into
it.
It's
one of those badass
Jeeps. And he gets mauled by this dog, which I don't even know how that works.
I think the dog just tried to attack. He probably freaked out.
Yeah.
Got caught up in the car a bit. Maybe got some scratches.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this guy's like a demigod, and he, like, kicks so much ass, and this, like, little pooches. But it's, I think it's cute that he's, like, letting his dog maul him.
Then
he almost burns himself to death on this boat.
This boat owner. Can you imagine? This boat owner comes out to his dock, and he's like, what the fuck? My boat is on fire. He pulls it in, and he's like, the perfectly good engine just threw it off and sank to the bottom.
Yeah.
Just this pointless destruction. Like, it's got to be so bizarre. You can't even be mad. You're just like, why?
Yeah.
Or it all happened so fast, whether they're like an older couple that's just watching from the window. Like, what
this guy's
the
like,
hell?
Call the cops. Oh, don't bother. He set himself on fire. I don't know. It's and then him finally ending up on the Faith of the Raptured tour bus.
That's
how many of these guys has he beat up before we get to the next episode? Like, I can't wait to see what happens with this tour bus. Oh, I bet it wrecks and they all die. It's going to be something tragic.
Oh yeah, it's going to
flip
something.
The fuck over, and everyone's going to die except for him. He's going to keep walking to New Orleans.
Yeah, he's not making it there in one piece. That's for sure.
Last but not least, we have the Corn Palace, where you know these roadside attraction places. They're all about the green,
which is called the Porn Palace, right?
Yeah, I think the way it, yeah,
but the way it's burnout,
yeah,
shows it as corn.
And what
do you think that something Mama G calls it just for like prudency's sake?
I don't know, because I actually didn't get that. I thought it was a corn sign that burnt out to make it look like a P, and you're saying it was a corn sign that burnt out to look like a C.
Yeah.
Either way, they're playing with it.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
But either way, it's also a massive front for a giant weed grow operation overseen by this...
Also, why would you name a strip joint the Corn Palace?
Because it's in Nebraska, right? Like, it's just like they're just leaning into the stereotype.
Oh, all right.
It'd be like there's got to be a strip club in Speedway called Racers, right? Right? It's kind of that kind of thing.
All right, that's fair.
In the Midwest, what are you going to call a strip joint come weed farm? The Corn Palace. So Efreet goes here to get Gungnir back, and he meets this Lakota spider trickster god, Iktomi. Who says, yeah, I've got Odin's spear, and he can have it back, but he's got to pay homage when the time comes. And then Efreet says, that belief is what you need. And I'm like, this is some crazy conservation of energy kind of thing. That, like, okay, his belief, his faith in Odin that he's going to worship him is actually going to somehow sustain him. Is that what they're saying?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
Which is weird. It's like, it's almost like if all the gods get together and did a belief circle jerk, they could just live forever.
Right.
But I don't know. I felt like I didn't understand. There's also another exchange where Iktomi says, this is a weapon of death. Will Thoth allow it? And the genie basically says, mind your own business, and they treat it kind of like a joke. But that guy's going to come for an accounting, right?
Everyone does at some point.
He yes. also gives him a sprout to give to Wednesday.
Yes,
any
he's
ideas
gonna need
on
this.
What that could be?
A bean that he dropped in the water, and it sprouted immediately, but didn't grow any bigger than that.
Oh, see, I was so fixated on the reference to Yggdrasil, the world tree that connects all the different Norse universes and their pantheon. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, maybe this is like a sprout. Maybe that tree's died or somehow. I'm not up on my Norse mythology, but maybe that's like supposed to be the seedling of that. But you're right. Now it did look more like a bean. Is this like a magic beanstalk kind of thing?
Maybe. But like I said, he dropped it in the water. It grew immediately, but then stopped.
Yeah.
So is it...
It's the sickest hydroponic...
I feel it.
It's like... Yes. It's like you put that in your peace pipe and...
This is a Willie Nelson strain.
You will not be able to get out of the Corn Palace. The Grim Creeper will set in and dig in.
Yeah.
Is there okay, because of all the stoners kind of like ironically believing in the Grim Creeper, is there a spiritual being known as the Grim Creeper?
Spoilers for next episode.
What would the Grim Creeper look like? I'm thinking like it's essentially like Cheech or Chong in a Holocaust cloak with
oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like, it's like the traditional skeleton with the cloak, except the cloak is entirely made out of drug rug material.
Yeah. Is there just smoke rolling out of his robes at all time? And he has like fiery letter. He has a fiery number written on his forehead. It's not 666. It's 420.
Yes, that's the Grim Creeper.
That's the Grim Creeper. He'll be on next to Salt.
Instead of a scythe, it's just like a really weird bong.
Yeah,
it's a really long, long pipe.
No, he was featured heavily in the trailer.
Okay. Wait. No, I have one more.
One more point.
One more. Not points. Question to pose to you.
All right. Pose it.
Where did Nancy and Bilquis go this episode?
Well, Nancy walked off the set because he didn't want to go to Valhalla for 3 seconds. He didn't want to take the 3 second round trip.
That was the last episode. This episode we didn't get either of them.
So he said, "I'll see you in
Cairo."
And presumably everyone's now in Cairo, and we'll resume with the goddamn plot next week.
All right.
That's my idea. All right. Feedback sent to TV at baldmove.com, or we have weekly discussion threads in our forums at baldmove.com. Cecily, what's our first feedback?
This feedback is from Nick. He says, "Hey, Aaron and Cecily.
Hey, Nick.
Just wanted to help with info on House of the Rock.
Hmm.
Mostly everything there is interactive with tokens, and some things are off, or of course, partitions off, like that maroon wall area is there, but you can't walk through it.
Hmm.
If you have time, though, going there is well worth it. The episode barely shows much of what's there. It is about 3 hours of stuff to walk through. Christmas time, they change stuff to Santa, but either time, it's worth the trip. We gotta make a Christmas trip there."
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard enough. I've heard enough.
You've heard enough.
We can get there, what, probably 6 hours?
Maybe.
Eight?
I don't know.
Eight at the most?
Drive faster.
Yeah, it's a day trip. We can do that. We can do a family day trip.
Once we take your shitty old vibe and imbue it with the spirit of some sort of...
Slipnir,
then we can get there in 2 tops.
I don't think the vibe can contain the spirit of Slipnir.
Nick finishes
it has
by...
but four cylinders, not the mighty eight.
Nick finishes by saying, "Thanks for the new shows and Twitch streams that I'm too old to understand, so I wait to watch on YouTube."
Aww.
Thanks, Nick. We love doing
those. We're
too
old to understand it either. Jack helped us set it up, and, you know, we just hit play now.
Okay. This next one is from Danielle M. "I was wondering if y'all are also planning on covering the other game and show Good Omens coming out the end of May on Amazon Prime."
Holy shit.
So we watched the trailer right before this episode, or right before we recorded this podcast, and yes, there's nothing I don't love about the trailer. It's too much to even say. I can't even sum it up. Go watch it for yourself. But we are 100% on board. And yeah. I don't know if that's a me and Aaron thing, or Jim and Aaron, or the three of us.
Yeah.
Love to gauge his interest, but I'm on board.
Yeah, I think that when we talked about it, because someone pitched it on us on Lunch with Jim and Aaron about a couple of months ago, like around Christmas time, and I think we both seemed interested in it, and that was before I found out it has, like, John Hamm and David Tennant and one of the Sheen.
Martin Sheen.
Not Martin.
It's Martin Sheen.
Is it?
Yes,
Martin Sheen was the
Martin
president,
Sheen.
Wasn't he?
Michael
it's one
Sheen.
Of the Sheen. It's
Michael
the Sheen.
Sheen.
The sex. It's sex in the. It's Sex in the City.
It's
nope, it's the Masters
wrong.
Of Sex.
Oh,
Master
Jesus.
Of Sex. Sheen.
Just edit all that out.
Master of Sex. Sheen.
Michael
is
Sheen.
It is. Michael Sheen. There you go. I knew it wasn't.
Oh,
Martin.
You mean Twilight Sheen?
Twilight. Yes, he was in Twilight. Holy shit. Holy shit. And he's also here in Good Omens. So
and
yeah,
we're here for it.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Okay. Next feedback is from Peggy B. Deus Moratorum equals God of the Dead, not God is dead.
Mm.
So maybe the bullets are a little gift from Hades. I'm a Latin teacher, so I'm sure of the translation.
Or isn't Thoth? Isn't that or maybe not. I don't know anything about Egyptian mythology. Here's the thing. I respect your Latin teaching credibility or your ability, obviously, but
far more than the showrunners do.
Yes, unfortunately, when I looked it up, it seemed like almost universally the accepted pop culture translation is God is dead. Maybe you can blame Nishi for that because it seems like he used that in conjunction with that quote. I likely believe that they're using the widespread colloquial usage of the Latin translation, or they're using the very specific academic usage. I think they're probably doing the former rather than the latter, but I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, Neil Gaiman's a pretty smart dude.
She continues. What if the Laura shadow relationship is a kind of reversal on the Orpheus and Eurydice story? Sorry, my pronunciations aren't on point tonight. Eurydice story?
Mm-hmm.
In the Greek myth, Orpheus tricks his way into the underworld to retrieve his dead wife. Here, the dead wife tricks her way out of the underworld to get back to her husband. The irritating part, of course, is that Laura is weak and self-serving, and both we and Shadow cannot forgive her for it.
Could be.
I don't know enough about that story, but I think that's really interesting.
It does seem like it's pretty easy world building to take, because this is something that came up again and again in that the Gods of Thrones book that I wrote about Game of Thrones. I'm plugging it. You can purchase it with a link in the show notes. But one thing that came up again and again is it's effective world building to take myths from our real world and, like, you know, do a little swapping around, change the parts, slap a new coat of paint on it, and trot it out because it feels very, very real, but it also has a kind of an original spin. And sometimes by altering different parts, like gender swapping it or changing what cultures or religions are in the parts, it can give a new spin and a new way to think or look about the topic on the boot. So wouldn't surprise me if they're going for that kind of inverted illusion,
right?
It feels real, it feels ancient, it feels like part of the hero's journey, and they just have to swap a couple things around.
Next feedback is from NCAT. So when Shadow's mom in a flashback was on the phone with presumably Shadow's father, and she said something to the effect of, "I have been taking him to live across the world," does this low-key hint toward Mr. World being Shadow's father?
I don't know, because, like, I feel like she's taken around to show him the world in more of a positive sense, like a tour of, like, the best of humanity, whereas Mr. World seems like he's the belief in the man, in the Illuminati, in the Rothschild Foundation, all these, like, conspiracy theories about someone pulling the strings and moving in the shadows, a very negative, undemocratic kind of fascist thing. So, like, it would be interesting if that was his father and that she's trying to, like, beat that out of him. But also, I find it unsatisfying because I feel like Shadow's backstory has to weave in some kind of deep roots to American gods in the form, especially of this fiery buffalo, or a lot of season one's not going to make sense. But again, they changed showrunners, a bunch of other stuff. Maybe they're going to retcon all that stuff. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I thought that when she was talking to whomever on the phone she was talking to, maybe I got the impression that she was running from something or someone.
Huh.
You know, that's the reason why they were only going to spend one summer there, promise, and then he never left again.
Huh.
Type of thing. Maybe she's running from whatever is trying to steal her light. Maybe whatever is trying to steal her light is Wednesday.
Huh.
Maybe Wednesday is trying to steal that light from Shadow now, or use it for himself. I don't know.
I think every season, if it's going to be one of these mystery box shows, they have to, like, give a couple of really solid answers to some of the questions. They can raise more, but they have to give solid, satisfactory answers to a question or two. And I guess I'm looking those basic questions. I don't know how much longer they can keep punting those into future seasons and me to stay interested.
Last feedback from C. Nobog. He says, "I curse you. I curse you with Chernobog's curse. Fuck you. Fuck your mother. Fuck the horse you rode in on. You will not even die in battle. No warrior will taste your blood. No one alive will take your life.
Is this making the show be canceled after the season? Is that?"
I think so. "You will die with a sweet kiss on your lips and eternal darkness in your soul." So, all right. Thanks for listening.
All right. I'm going to wake up, feel like a million bucks.
If you don't feel like a million bucks tomorrow, then I promise I will hit you in the head with a hammer.
All right. Anything else before we sign off?
That is all I have for tonight.
All right. I think Jim and I will be back. It depends on how jet lagged he is from his trip to Italy. But I think we'll be back Friday for some more Bald Move TV, because we had some unfinished business from the week before. And there's a bunch of stuff that's come out in the meantime. I know Cess and I have seen some shows that we want to talk about too.
We've seen some shit, man.
We've
are going to be streaming.
We've seen some things and then some.
Twitch, every Wednesday.
Yeah, and so Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to be streaming some Super Mario Brothers, if you guys want to watch that. We're getting real close to finishing the new Super Mario Brothers U, and we're going to play a little House of the Dead after that. And like I said, there's going to be a Bald Move TV out, I think, this Friday. There's also, at some point, we're going to give a review of the new Jordan Peele movie, Us, coming out real soon. We just dropped a promo podcast for the new Gods of Thrones book on a Game of Thrones pod or Game of Thrones podcast feed. 2 more weeks until we start our preseason coverage for season 8, and then a week after that, it'll actually be here, season 8 of Game of Thrones. There is so much cool content coming up here at baldmove.com. I hope you stick around for all of it. TV at baldmove.com is how you send feedback into here. Please visit our forums, forums.baldmove.com. We will be back when we have some more television and all of television to talk about. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya.